And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo! What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 83 of the Fanboy Garage. It's another week. It's another episode. It's good to have you guys here with us again. But I'm excited. I am excited because we get to have a very special guest on the show today. What's up, Vanessa?
Hello, it's Banana.
Hey, Banana, that's right, Banana.
Kind of like my podding name.
Your pod name, Banana. Yeah, so we got to bring Vanessa Banana back on the show. I think you were on here pretty early on for us. And we got to talk to you and Ariel about Catfight. And so we figured it's about time to bring you back on. There's lots of stuff to talk about related to Batman and Birds of Prey and all that. So we want to get your take on a whole bunch of stuff.
That's right. That was a while ago. And just an update, Catfight has actually gotten into its third film festival, and it's coming to Queens. So I'm really excited. It's going to play at the Queens World Film Festival, which is in my hometown of Queens, in March next month. So I will give you guys details if you want to go and check it out.
Sweet. Yeah, that's dope. Great. So it's been picking up a lot of steam, huh? So what's new with you? I know folks haven't heard your voice in quite a while. So give us an update. What's new? How's life?
You know what? Life is great. I've actually done a lot of traveling since the holidays. So I've actually been out of town almost since like Thanksgiving. I spent a month in Texas where my boyfriend lives. And then I came back and then I went on the Chris Jericho cruise, which we haven't really talked about either. So I've just been adjusting and finally back to normal. When I got off the ship, I kind of had really, really bad land legs and I had like vertigo for 2 weeks. So I finally feel back to normal and just getting back into the swing of things for 2020.
Dope. I've never, ever been on a cruise ever. And my wife goes on, she was like, her and her family would do cruises all the time. And in the 13 or so years that we've been together, never once have we been on a cruise. And then we were supposed to go on a cruise and Zika happened, and that put up, we were gonna go to Cancun. And then the Zika thing happened, and she was she was pregnant at the time we were gonna do our baby moon, so that didn't happen.
Oh man, I got off the cruise right before the whole like coronavirus thing happened, so I was kind of happy about that.
yeah. Well, good
things
timing.
Nuts. Yeah. So, okay. So, let's do what we normally do. We're going to jump right into the box office. So Chris.
Yeah. Well, before we do that, you know, because we were talking off the air or even I think right at the beginning of the show about the last time we had Vanessa on.
Yeah.
And, I thought my memory was correct, but I just verified it again. And it's kind of ironic. The last time that you were on the show, Vanessa, we actually started off that episode talking about whether Armie Hammer was or was not going to be Batman. And which is ironic now considering what we're going to be talking about later on in this show, which is the actual reveal of the or tease of the new Batman outfit that Robert Pattinson will be wearing in the Batman. So it's kind of funny. Yeah,
it comes, we're coming full circle.
Yeah,
if this were a Star Wars story, we couldn't have written it any better.
Yeah,
the circle is now complete. Anyway, so going back to the world of Batman.
Sure.
Birds of Prey.
So I mean, we'll start with box office and we'll jump to number two this week. We will talk about number one in a minute, but so Birds of Prey, very fascinated to see what it was going to do, right? Or actually Harley Quinn Birds of Prey, we have to call it by its new proper title now. Fascinated by what it was going to do in its second weekend. So we discussed at length last week that it did $33 million in its opening weekend and like $80 million worldwide. So here's the good news for Birds of Prey is that in weekend two, now this is the 3 day. Right, we'll talk about the 4 day in a bit, but for the 3 day weekend, it only had a 47.5% drop. Now, that's actually not a bad hold for a movie that, you know, was not well received in its opening weekend, right? As far right. as not the fans. Fans liked it, critics liked it, but it didn't do well opening weekend. So you fear for this now that it was going to go into some free fall. Now, the bad news is that it was starting at such a low bar.
That, yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, it does $17.25 million for the 3-day weekend, and it added another $2.5 million on Monday. So, you know, right now as it stands on Tuesday, the 18th, it is at $62 million domestic, $83.5 million worldwide. I'm sorry, international, and then $145.6 million worldwide after 2 weeks. And we said last week that this movie would have to probably do about $250 million worldwide in order for it just to break even. And that's based on what analysts are saying. So the budget was, and I've seen a lot of people on Twitter this week talking about how the budget is $75-80 million. No, the budget for this movie is $97 million. The original budget before the reshoots that they brought Chad Stahelski in for was about $75-80 million. But that went up a lot, obviously, with the extensive reshoots that they did. Plus, that doesn't include marketing costs and then theater splits. So when people are trying to wrap their heads around like whether this thing is a bomb or not, or whether it's going to be a failure or not and lose money, like you have to factor all of those things in. So and at $145.5 million after 2 weeks, even with a, you know, a pretty decent second week hold, I don't know. I mean, does this thing have another $100+ million in it worldwide?
Yeah, I would never. First of all, I'm shocked that we're having this conversation. Of the latest DC films, this one, outside of Joker, this one was like fun to me. You know, like we talked about it last week. I thought it was good. I actually walked out going, yeah, that was decent. Like, I walked out of Aquaman like meh. I walked out of Shazam like well, and then. I walked out of Birds of Prey. I was like, okay, yeah, okay, that's decent. And this one definitely is by far, I think, underperforming in relation to those other films. So
yeah,
I'm shocked. I am shocked. Vanessa, what do you think about all this?
Well, you know, the first thought in my head is that the box office numbers worldwide isn't that bad, considering that it didn't open in China.
Right.
Which always brings in, you know, a lot of money, like we saw with Aquaman. Mm-hmm. And so I think that has a little something to do with it, which, you know, Cathy Yan she was born in China. She's a Chinese-born American, you know, film director. I'm surprised it didn't open there, but I don't know the exact reasons why. Maybe, you know, with all this, like, coronavirus thing might have affected, you know, some of the box office numbers. I really enjoyed the film, and I have so many thoughts about it. I've been talking to people the last like week on my Facebook blew up when I put on a post like, should I even bother watching this movie? Because I heard such bad reviews from, funny enough, all my guy friends. So then a lot of girls that I know started messaging me like, hey, let's go see the movie for like Galentine's Day, you know, if you're not doing anything for Valentine's Day. And all of the girls that I talked to loved it. So then I was like, OK, I have to see this for myself and see if this is a discrepancy over like male and female perspective, which I think there's something to be said about that overall, you know.
Go. I know. I'm fascinated. Go into this. I want to hear more about it because I think Chris and I think we're both middle of the road. Like, yeah, okay, that was a fine movie. I think the action sequences saved it. At least that was you know, our take last week. And as it sits with me, I'm still like, yeah, I certainly enjoyed it more than I did Suicide Squad. But yeah, no, I'd love to hear your perspective on that because it's an interesting take that I don't think we actually on this show we've had much of an opportunity to go into. So please.
So where do I start? You know, okay. So I'll start with my own experience in the theater. You know, when it first started, it started spoilers ahead, but it started with like this wacky, you know, little like cartoon kind of like recap of Harley Quinn and how she becomes Harley Quinn and her relationship. And I think from the very beginning, we've seen that character as a sidekick, you know, to the Joker. Mm-hmm. She hasn't really been developed as a lot of the female characters that we've seen on screen, like Wonder Woman or even like Captain Marvel or Black Widow, for example. So this was kind of her, it was her movie. So I really enjoyed it from that perspective. And I think there was so much underlying like feminist, like F the patriarchy tones. And mm-hmm. I think that might have rubbed some like guys the wrong way, especially if you're like an alpha male. Like subconsciously, like it's not like they walk around with those ideas in their head. It's just that's what we're taught by society and in all the movies that we've seen is like the female is like the damsel in distress, you know, they're the sidekick. Mm-hmm. And I think what I loved about this movie was that it wasn't a serious superhero movie. We all take these superhero movies so seriously, like the Joker is so serious, you know. Like Batman is so serious. And Kathy Ann just came in, kicked the door down and was like, I'm going to make a wacky, fun movie that's not serious. So don't take it seriously. It made fun of itself. It laughed at itself. It had very interesting graphics and way of storytelling. And a lot of people I spoke to said the plot was, you know, horrible. The writing was bad. I don't think the film was meant to have super good writing or plot. It was about Harley Quinn's journey coming out of the shadows of the Joker. And in the movie, everyone refers to her as Joker's girl, Joker's girl. No one really says her name. And I like that she had the journey where she found herself and who she was, like the title says, the emancipation of her. So that part I really enjoyed and I really connected to, and I could see why people didn't connect to that. So that's what I really enjoyed about it.
Wow. Chris?
You know? Yeah, no, I mean, I'm someone who I was much more on the positive side of middle of the road. I liked the movie. And I said I liked especially that last like half hour or so. I really liked a lot. But mainly for the action stuff. And I do think this movie is going to find an audience at some point. It's probably not going to happen here in theaters, but I think this is the type of movie that you find one day when you're just kind of flipping through and it either pops up on like a streaming service or on like HBO or something like that, or even, you know, as like a rental one night. And I think people are going to realize that this is really like it's almost like a live action adult cartoon in a lot of ways, and it's fun and it's cool. Just a quick note though on the China thing, because we mentioned it. I think the biggest reason why it wasn't released in China is because it's very difficult for R-rated American movies to get a release in China. Joker, for instance, wasn't released in China. Because they have to make a lot of cuts, and you know, movies like Logan have been released in China but they have to cut them. And I think a movie like this, or even a movie like Joker, they probably figured it was going to be really hard to cut out enough and keep the integrity of the movie.
Such BS, because the rated R version of this is out of curse words, I think.
Well, we talked about that.
The violence is fine, but it wasn't like outside of, you know, blowing up Black Mask at the end, but the violence wasn't really that.
Although that's based on our standards, though, right? Sure, we don't know what their standards are for that. True. Yeah.
No, Chris, that's a really good point. Like one of her, like when she's going through her list of, you know, grievances, like per guy, one of the grievances was her having, you know, her V. If I don't know what I can say on this pod, but I think that might turn off some Chinese very conservative audiences, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. I think this is really early. This movie is really early on in the whole kind of like female-led superhero movies. This is the very beginning. Right. I don't think American audiences are ready for, you know, a Harley Quinn that is a character study that can be explored like what, you know, Todd Phillips did with the Joker. I think until we get to that point, this is this is kind of an expression of the whole Me Too movement, the anger that's going on, and you can see a lot of it in the film. So it kind of just reflects the experience of what a lot of women are going through now. I can only speak from a cis, you know, female perspective, but there is a lot of anger. There is a lot of like, let's fight back. Let's right. do whatever we want. Let's empower ourselves. We're not at the point where something like a Harley Quinn story can really be taken seriously. You know, Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel, like, they're on the good side. So there's elements to that where, you know, people are like, okay, that's like the superhero formula. We're just putting in someone else. Mm-hmm. With her, she's kind of like the anti-hero, much like the Joker. So I don't think us as a whole are ready for an in-depth character study on her yet. So this seemed kind of fun. It was just like I can explain it the best. It's like kicking the door down. Let's do something different. She's like hitting people with like pellets that explode into like sparkles, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so ridiculous. And everyone is taking it so seriously. I'm like, it's not serious. It's fun. It's girly. It's like wacky.
So we talked a little bit about the rated R thing on last show, and we mentioned it here, but do you think it was a missed opportunity to not make this thing PG-13 and then they could have roped in a lot more of the teenage, you know, female audience? Do you think there was a missed move on them on that part? Or do you think it absolutely needed to be rated R?
I don't think it needed to be rated R. That's a really good point. It did miss that demographic. But, you know, like, teenagers find a way to watch those movies, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that big of a deal.
The interesting thing too is I think, and we talked a little bit about this last week, but it expected to make, you know, to hit, you know, to actually double down on its weekend because of the 3-day weekend this weekend, and it should have, I think, in my opinion, opened this weekend, right? Leading with the Valentine's Day Friday, and then you get the extra day and all of that stuff, but it opened a week early, which I don't think did it any favors. So,
right.
Ugh. Yeah, especially with Margot Robbie leading it and coming off of like her, you know, nominations in the festival circuit and how well she did with like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm actually really surprised it didn't do as well as it did for a holiday opening weekend.
Yeah.
How
well?
Since we're on this topic right now, before we get into the rest of the box office, because I think it fits right now, let's mm-hmm. talk about Ron Diesel's question.
Yeah.
Right? Because Ron asked, for argument's sake, he says, that if we get a Gotham City Sirens or another Birds of Prey movie, would you put that on hold after Batman comes out and have those characters show up in like with Matt Reeves style? In Gotham City.
Ooh, that's interesting. I mean, I think that let's see how audiences resonate to her name is totally blanking on me, but the actress playing Catwoman. I don't know why her name just flew out of my
head. Zoe Kravitz.
Because I think that's going to be another anti-hero type character that people are going to have a lot of fun with.
Sure.
I don't know if these universes can work, and I don't know if they're – I don't think that DC is in the business of connecting this Harley Quinn with Pattinson. At least – Matt Reeves is getting his trilogy, and I think that's an open-shut kind of deal. I'm sure there's going to be opportunities to kind of spin off characters. And if there were those opportunities, I think it would be led by Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman. And I think, unfortunately, we won't see a Birds of Prey 2 or a Gotham City Sirens.
Yeah, I think I you took the words right out of my mouth. I think the DC universe is not in the business of tying, you know, timelines and stories together. Every movie that's come out pretty recently have been kind of like standalone and kind of in their own tone and their own world. So it's hard to mesh those two together or two or three, you know. When I was watching this movie, it was this movie. I didn't watch this movie like I watch Marvel movies, you know, like, ooh, like, are they going to end up in, you know, this next film? Are they, how are they going to tie their stories together? Or they give little clues. You know, that's kind of what DC does. And that's kind of the mark that they're trying to set for themselves and do things differently. So I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, at this point we've got, I mean, there are essentially three different Batman characters. You know what I'm saying? Like you've got Robert Pattinson's Batman, right? So we're all familiar with that, and that's a new thing. And then you've got the Harley Quinn version of Batman, which is Affleck's Batman. And then you've got the Joker's young Bruce Wayne, who is on his way to be Batman. You know what I'm saying? So there's three very different universes, so to speak. And who knows, again, what could happen in the future if DC changes its tune and uses the Flash as a way to, you know, talk about multiverses and all of that stuff. So I don't know, Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, or they could just drop it. You know, like, no, and like, I mean that in the sense like this movie, because you mentioned like Affleck's Batman is this Harley Quinn's Batman, and I would say it was this Harley Quinn's Batman, because if you watch Birds of Prey, they mention that there's, you know, a Batman, but it's not shown, right, that it's Affleck's Batman. So, and I think that the fact that this is going to tie into the Suicide Squad, right, because Harley Quinn is in that, but that movie, we don't even know how connected that's going to be to Suicide Squad, other than the fact that there's some of the same cast in it, but
right.
I mean, that could wind up becoming its own thing altogether too. And if it is, I think at that point we can safely say that this has been kind of an unclean, clean break away from that past, because even in Shazam, where clearly the events of the previous movies, right, had taken place, because we see references to it. But, you know, again, we see a headless Superman at the end of that, you know? So I think that, you know, that along with the way they handle this movie and references, I don't think that we have to worry too much about that, like how this stuff connects to what came before it. And I don't think we even really need to worry about how this stuff connects to what's coming after it, because like Vanessa said, they're finally doing what I've hoped that they would have done from the beginning, which is just make the best movies they think they can make. And there's going to be successes and there's going to be missteps. So this was a box office misstep, at least. And, you know, that's Ron's other question, which he says, what lessons do we hope DC learns from the reactions in box office for Birds of Prey? And what would we advise them to do to improve on for the future of DC films? And I don't think this movie has nothing to do with the quality of the film, right?
Because
the quality of this movie was probably as good as it could have been. You know, this is a good movie that was well received by a lot of people, and it just hasn't worked at the box office. Now, if anything, Warner Brothers is to blame for a lot of this directly, because the way it was marketed, you know, the title, their R rating, like all of these things that all factored in that we talked about on last episode that are all valid reasons for why the movie underperformed. It has nothing to do with the movie itself. I mean, the movie did what it needed to do, and they even did the reshoots, which greatly improved the film. So I don't think that is anything that they have to learn from. You know, because, you know, if you look at Aquaman, Shazam, Joker, and this movie now, like, there's a lot of things that don't make sense between those four films, right? So I don't really know that there are any individual lessons at this point that they can learn. And hopefully the lesson is then, I guess, don't overreact to anything. Just stick to your guns, stick to your plan.
I also think it's like there is also kind of an unfairness because it is a female-led movie. Like there's this pressure for it to do really well, you know? For example, like Shazam. I don't know off the top of my head how well it did, but I didn't really particularly like that movie. But I know they're just going to be like, oh, okay, that didn't work. Let's move on to the next. And I feel like female-led superhero movies have all this pressure, you know, like oh, we expect it to make $250 million because they want it to make that much. But it's still so early in the game, and people are just exploring what these movies could look like and what they could sound like, this is just one iteration of what that looks like. So, you know, because this didn't do well, if it doesn't lead to a second movie or like a sequel or something like that, I think there is a lot of pressure and they're going to take, you know, the box office numbers for this movie so much into account, more so than maybe other male super-led hero movies that might have flopped. And then they're like, all right, let's try something different. Let's bring another director. Let's reboot it. Let's do Batman again, you know?
Do you think movies like Wonder Woman and I understand this is a villain, but do you think the movies like Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel kind of set a precedence for the female genre comic book movies? I mean, Captain Marvel hit over $1 billion. I'm not saying that Birds of Prey, Harley Quinn, whatever they're calling it these days, I didn't think it was going to make $1 billion, but. Do you think that they're setting unrealistic expectations? You just said that, yes.
Yeah, I think so. I also think, you know, with the trailer that they released, like you guys talked about the marketing last episode, it's a completely different tone. If we got a Harley Quinn Birds of Prey movie that was in the same vein and tone of like a Wonder Woman genre or like a Captain Marvel genre, I think it would have brought in more numbers. You know, because the comic book movie audience, we're very used to these like more serious movies, and DC is kind of known for its more dark takes on characters. And this one was exceptionally light, coming off the heels of like Shazam and Aquaman, which were like super light movies, know?
Yeah. So, and Shazam, it did. We've gone back and forth on that movie. It was not a flop by any stretch. It wound up being profitable, but it did $350 million worldwide. So it didn't like set the box office on fire, but it wound up being profitable and it's going to get a sequel. So yeah, I mean, so this is what happens, and this isn't a bad thing for me. That's why I don't really want to take too much negative out of what happened here with this movie, because I do think that there were just missteps on the studio's part. But, you know, they're just not doing like what Marvel does. So Marvel has created, and this is not a knock on DC, because I don't want them to be like to do what Marvel's doing, but Marvel created a formula and they have a universe now that is so established that the Marvel film has almost become a genre of its own, right? Oh, I'm going to go see the new Marvel film. They don't even care what it is. People don't care what it is, who it is. You know, I mean, Ant-Man movies can make $600, $700 million at the box office. Captain Marvel can do $1.1 billion. We know what Black Panther did. I mean, these are not like super A-list characters that are making this money now, because they've established themselves as a genre. It's an event when a Marvel film comes out. DC hasn't done that. And that's okay, because they're also taking some chances now, you know. Right. Aquaman and Shazam and Joker and Birds of Prey and I'm sure Wonder Woman 84, like they all have their own feel and their own vibe, and they were all going for somewhat different audiences in a way. And that's okay, because the Harley Quinn, this movie, this Birds of Prey movie, is what a Harley Quinn movie probably should have been, tone-wise.
Sure.
Just like, you know, you can say that the Aquaman movie for that version of Aquaman was what that movie should have been. And Shazam, we can debate over the tone and feel of that movie. And because I don't necessarily think that was the right tone and feel for that character, but they went in that direction and it was different, and that's fine. And obviously Joker, very different, very specific tone and feel, but again, very relevant to the character. And that's where they need to be. And not be afraid of creating blockbusters, because they're going to have their successes, right? They're going to have their Jokers and their Aquamans, and I'm sure Wonder Woman 84 is going to make a ton of money, and that'll be okay for them. So that should be able to support some of these other films that will take some chances.
Yeah,
and hopefully that's a good thing.
But I think that's the misstep in DC, whereas like every Marvel movie that comes out, you go see it because you know you might gain something from that for you to take into the next movie. It's almost like FOMO. You don't want to miss it because you don't want to miss something, a storyline or a plot or like an Easter egg. Whereas when you watch the next movie, everyone knows what's going on and you're like, oh, I didn't see that movie. I missed it.
Yeah, there are events.
They're events, yeah. Whereas, like, in the DC universe, all these movies are standalone where I wasn't watching the movie thinking, like, oh, where's Harley Quinn? Like, is she going to, like, walk into this world? She's not. It's just – it's standalone. So I think that deters a lot of people from – there is no FOMO aspect, which is, like, the best way I can put it, because if they miss the movie, they're not going to miss anything if they go see Batman. They're not.
Sure.
You know?
And that does inhibit – potential box office, but I think creatively though it's not a bad thing, because look, we wouldn't have been able to get Joker if DC was doing like what Marvel's doing, and you know, that one gem is worth any, you know, a couple of ones that maybe don't hit to me,
sure,
rather than the Marvel movies, which I just find that as much as I enjoy them and as much as I always go to see them, with the exception of a few, you know, that really stand out, I find myself rarely rewatching them. You know, and just because, like, they are, yeah, it's an event and it's like one big story and all that stuff. But like, as an individual work, like, there are maybe a handful that I will rewatch over and over again based on just the merits of that film on its own. It's just two very different approaches, and that's cool.
Dude, it's like a game of Jenga.
Yeah.
It's like there are some pieces that are going to hold the whole thing together that are absolutely integral to the structure of, you know, the tower.
Sure.
But then there's some pieces you can knock away you don't really care about.
Yeah. I mean, I really believe a big part of the success of the overwhelming success of Captain Marvel, which was a movie that I was underwhelmed by, was because people thought that it was going to tie in much more into Avengers, right? Endgame.
Yeah. That's a yes and no, but I also think too, again, the marketing for that film, that movie dropped on International Women's Day.
Yes, it did.
In the month of March.
Sure.
International Women's Month. So the campaign of like stronger, better, faster, like that resonated hardcore with a lot of people, man, a lot of women. Mm-hmm. And they all turned out for that film.
Yep.
Big time. So there's that. You know, there's the marketing genius behind it. But I mean, I agree with you, though, too. I think, again, for us, I was like, yeah, okay, that's fine. I thought there was going to be more to Infinity War and the linkage between there, especially since, you know, they teased it at the end. But it was fine. I mean, whatever.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah, I just think like the female superhero led movie genre is, we're not there yet with how much artistic freedom some other movies, you know, have. And I'm excited to see, you know, the next Black Widow movie, and it's, you know, different companies, but it's just the beginning. And that's what I love about this movie, is that it really did not care. It didn't care.
No.
It was like, Kathy Ann was like, I'm going to do what I want, and this is my vision, which I think DC is really good at giving its directors, like, more artistic leeway, I would say. And she was like, I'm just gonna do my thing. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was wacky. I don't think anyone should take it seriously. A lot of people are taking it seriously, which I think is leading to the box office, you know, numbers. Mm. Especially coming off the heels of Joker. Like, that could have had something to do with it.
Mm. If only the fight choreography in Black Widow will be as cool as fight choreography.
Dude, yeah. Because
that's exactly what I was hoping for out of a Black Widow film.
I follow the girl who stunt doubled Margot Robbie on Instagram.
Yeah, she was a beast.
Oh, I was like, she's just so cool, man. Like, seeing her do that. She posted a little clip of her doing the, when they're in the police precinct.
With the bat?
With the cells.
Yeah.
And I loved like her, like, oh my God. It was amazing. It was good.
Yeah, that's Chad Stahelski.
Yeah,
yep.
But I think a lot of, like, I had 66 comments on my Facebook post, you know, and then some. This guy also posted a YouTube video of like Harley Quinn movie, like pitch meeting, and this like funny YouTube guy was like going over what the pitch would have looked like. And like the guys thought it was funny, but I was like, no, it's not really that funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see what kind of impact this, this film has on Suicide Squad, if any. But you know, here's to hoping that it has some legs.
Yeah.
As things slow down a little bit before the next blockbuster.
Yeah. I have a feeling this is not going to affect the Suicide Squad at all. I think so far, I just have a feeling that, you know, with James Gunn there and the way he's already starting to, like, they're starting to market that and generate some buzz. I think that's going to do big numbers. But I thought this was going to do big numbers too. So yeah,
the James Gunn trolls, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, let's finish off the box office. Because I know you wanted to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog, which was the number one film this week.
Craziness.
It did $58 million for the 3 days, and then it added another almost $12 million on Monday. Mm-hmm. That is a big number for that movie. And right now it stands after 1 week, $70 million domestic, $43 million international. It obviously didn't open in a ton of markets, $113 million worldwide after its first week for a video game movie, which these don't usually do that well, right?
Yeah. No, these things like typically flop. So
It's Jim Carrey.
It's funny, and I also think too it is the attention to detail that Paramount and its, you know, its teams of VFX artists put into kind of getting it right. Because if I don't know if you remember this, Vanessa, but like when the first trailer dropped, people lost their minds because they're like, "That's not Sonic the Hedgehog, like that looks nothing like him." And then they had the VFX artists come back and re-render him, redesign him entirely. And you know, edit the movie with the new design, and it looked more, you know, more similar to what you'd expect Sonic the Hedgehog to look like. And so I think that probably added to it. But it just looked like a fun movie. I mean, I haven't seen it, but
it. Interesting that so this is another one of these movies where so the reviews were okay, right? It's at like 64% on Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score is 94%, and it was an A- cinema score. So again, it's another one of these movies where, like, you know, the audience has been enjoying it more, right, than the critics and tuning out. But now, to be fair, because we do have to be fair, because we always, you know, we talk about budgets and all this stuff. So the budget for this movie is $95 million. So this does still have some work to do, despite the fact that it had this, you know, good opening weekend, at least domestically. And we'll have to see how this thing holds, because, you know, I don't want to sit here and get all excited and anoint this thing a huge success, considering it's $95 million budget. You know, let's see how it holds, you know, after the nostalgia wears off and, you know, that initial punch. Does this thing have legs to it? Those audience metrics would make you think it does, but we'll see. And what does it do overseas?
It's also a PG film, so it has it has the ability to hit more mainstream audiences versus...
Absolutely. Yeah, and it ties into the nostalgia and all that stuff, and people getting excited for it. And then we had also... so Fantasy Island, I know it's a movie you were very excited about, Aaron.
We talked about it.
Yeah, so tell us how that was this weekend.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah.
Oh, God.
it was a great film. Forgot all the actors' names. I don't quite remember what happened in the plot. It's a memorable film. Totally.
Yeah. Anyway, that finished third. So this is another one of those like Blumhouse, like micro budget movies. So it doesn't really matter. It did $12.3 million, which is probably already profitable, even though the reviews were horrendous on it. And it is, in fact, a horror movie remake of the TV show, the classic TV show with Ricardo Montalban and Hervé Velasquez, right? But this is like a horror movie take on it. Whatever. Anyway, and then you had, so that's pretty much it. I mean, you got Bad Boys for Life is still hanging in there. I mean, it's not really dropping much, right? It was.
I didn't even know that movie came out.
Until now?
Yeah, I just saw it today. Like, I didn't see the movie. I mean, I just saw it on the box office list today. I didn't even know.
Yeah, it actually did pretty well.
Yeah, you know, we give you a pass.
I've been on a cruise. I've been in Texas, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly not listening to our show because I was giving that one rave reviews as well.
Yeah.
Didn't see it.
No. But it's holding up. Well. Yeah, I mean, only of like a 5% drop this weekend. That one did really, really well. So, yeah, so that's the story of the box office as we wait now for really the summer season to start, right?
Yeah. Mm. And it starts with Black Widow.
Yeah,
right? April.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy summer.
Yes, it is. Summer.
We've got some movies to look out for. Wonder Woman 84.
Yep.
The Eternals, maybe, yeah, something. I don't know. It's all a blur.
It's just all too much. I mean, we ran through the list, right? A couple episodes ago.
Bond. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, it's just too much. You lose
no
track
time
now.
To die.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, that song just dropped its opening by Billie Eilish. So I would recommend folks check that out because it's actually a pretty good song.
Okay.
For an 18 year old who is killing it.
So speaking of things coming out, not this year, but eventually.
Yes.
So Matt Reeves, finally, we were wondering when we were going to start getting some official stuff here and hoping that things started to come out before anything leaked. So Matt Reeves decided to take a really cool and dramatic way to reveal or at least tease the Batman outfit, costume, whatever, for his movie, The Batman. And he released this cool, like, just under a minute long video that gradually kind of builds towards giving you little nuggets of the suit, right? With some really cool music, you know, in the background, which may or may not be in the film. Right, but you would assume it definitely has Michael Giacchino written all over it, that movie, that song. And so this was cool, and the internet of course lost its mind as usual, and you know, shockingly, of course, you had people who loved it and people who didn't, just like any other time we've ever seen a Batman outfit ever in my lifetime be revealed. But still, there's things we haven't seen yet, right? So the talk is that it looks like he might have the long kind of angled out ears, like from the old school, you know, like Detective Comics, like 27 and stuff like that. Yeah. And obviously he doesn't have the full bat symbol, right? It's just the wings, which is very old school, like early Batman. And it looks like it's their metal, right? Built into the suit. And
kind of looks like a batarang.
Yeah. And it's got the Libra Mayo kind of collar cowl thing going for it. So it really looks like a hybrid of a lot of different really cool styles. We don't really have an idea of the color yet.
Yeah.
Or the colors.
Although, I mean, so it's so funny. I bet this was all by design. So he released, you know, Matt Reeves that is released as this 56-second clip on Vimeo, and the internet takes that. They recolor it. So I've seen it in black and white. I've seen it in various different colors. People have taken still images of that clip and have turned it into amazing fan art. People have recolored parts of the suit. And then people have upped the brightness. They've turned it into black and white, and then they upped the brightness. And so you get some really, really interesting details. And I'd be lying if I said, oh, I caught this myself, but there's a guy that I follow, on YouTube. His name is Cosplay Chris, and he's a huge cosplayer out in Australia. The dude's amazing. I mean, he does these custom collectibles, and he makes a lot of his own. I mean, literally the dude makes his own stuff, from scratch. He's got some really great, VFX background, like just handmade stuff he does on his own. And so I watched one of his videos, and there's like stitching. It's like, so the mask looks leather.
Yep.
And there's some interesting stitch work that's done around the nose and around the eyes. So it does have that like fabric, or like it's not armored look on the eyes, like, you know, for the cowl and whatever. And then you just get, you know, that close up of the chest, which looks very Arkham, like the Arkham video games, like Arkham Knight vibe to it. And actually the cosplay Chris was the first guy that I heard call out the emblem thing being potentially the pieces of Joe Chill's gun. Built into the chest, which a lot of people are debating about, but it is something that was in Detective Comics 1000, where Bruce Wayne, Batman, manages to get the pieces of the gun from Joe Chill, and he melds it down, melds down the metal to make a chest plate that he wears underneath the emblem to kind of protect his heart from like gunshots and things like that. So.
I'm stoked
about this costume. Even if it's not the first, you know, if it's an iteration of it, and obviously it evolves, but what we've seen thus far, I'm in love with. Vanessa, did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it. I think Robert Pattinson is really going to surprise us as Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell in the 56-second, you know, teaser video, but I think from his work that we've seen thus far, even just in the short clip, just the tone and the attitude, I think it's going to be really raw, really, you know, violent. And that chest plate that you're talking about, that really excites me. That's like an out of the box idea, even though it was already done, but like we haven't seen it in film.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool how they're going to use that, and maybe, you know, his other gadgets are going to get like updated.
Yeah. That, I mean, you mentioned something about Robert Pattinson. There's some movement stuff that he does in that clip that just feels Batman to me.
It's his jawline.
I don't know. It's like, it's that, but it's also like just the way he kind of like moves his shoulders as he kind of stands up in the, and the chest, his chest comes into view, you know, there's like this thing, and then he kind of tips his head down a little bit. It looked so good. Yeah. And it just got me super excited. Chris, you're really quiet on this. Do you like it?
Yeah, no, I do. I actually think that what we've seen is going to be, I think this thing, when we see the whole thing, just based on those elements that I pointed out, right? The ears and the neck thing and the cowl and all that stuff, like it feels like this is leading towards being like the ultimate like tribute suit, in that it's going to capture elements of so many different like versions of Batman, right? Old school comic, modern comic, video game, you know, like it's just going to be like a celebration of a lot of cool little elements of Batman, while and also being like cohesive too. And it's going to clearly look very different from any other costume that we've seen right on film so far, which is also cool because they're clearly going for a different vibe with this. And even like the music got me excited, because that little theme or whatever it is, it just conveys so much. Like it's kind of gothic, but it's creepy and eerie, but it's also almost like noir and detective-y at the same time. And it's like kind of old school and classic, but like there's just so much going on in that music which I assume is why they threw that in there, because they really want you to get a feel for like exactly where this is going.
And it's got such a nice build to it too.
Yeah.
It just starts like really low with like, I don't know, like a tapping of like a cymbal or a hi-hat or something like that. And it's like, doom, 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 doom. Like, oh God, man.
Yep.
Jumping out underneath my bed. I'm scared over here.
I think it's like, even though it was such a short teaser, every single element and attention to detail, it's really comforting to the viewer and to the fan to know like just how much thought that they've put into it. So you feel like there's, you know, like you feel good about wanting to see this movie, because you're like, oh, they're taking it so seriously, and there's so much thought going into something as simple as just this little teaser and what they're going to show. But there's so much more that's going on, you know. Yeah. So I feel like that comforted me a lot, and it made me really excited to see more. So they really did a good job with the teaser.
I mean, it's this is the kind of brilliance that I think, You know, we were talking a little bit before about Birds of Prey and maybe some of the missteps on the marketing side, but then they just knock it out of the park because they did the same thing with Joker. And, you know, because it just had – it had Arthur sitting there on a stool and the Joker images and all this stuff is, like, flashing onto his face. And it just gave you all of the – like, ooh, he's really – he's kind of, like, creepy looking. He's really skinny. I don't know what's going on there. And then he gives this, like, smile that just creeped the hell out of me and kind of stuck with me. But, it was – I don't ever remember seeing things like that from, you know, DC and Warner Brothers up until, you know, Todd Phillips released his test footage of Arthur. And now we're getting more test footage from Matt Reeves with Batman. And so these things, for better or worse, they spark conversation. They're brilliant marketing pieces. They give you a good sense of, you know, sort of where these films are going and sort of the direction and style and tone that they're going to take without actually revealing shit about the plot.
Yeah, I mean, clearly too, though, the one thing that the Todd Phillips, the early Joker thing, had in common with this, besides the feel, is that that was like director driven marketing.
Yeah,
you know, like that's not some guy some suit sitting in like an office in a studio, like cranking out ideas, trying to figure out how to market this thing. Like, that comes later. Like, this is just like directors generating buzz for their creation, like in a creative, artistic way. And there's an effectiveness to that, because like just watching this, like between the music and like the look of the suit and the vibe and all of that, like now the title The Batman, like it to me it all works together. Like this mm-hmm. just feels like it's going to be like a real old school like detective story. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's what it is, because that's where this seems to be headed. Like just the look and the sounds and the title and all that, like it feels like this is like an old like 50s, 60s detective story. Not in the setting in the movie, but just in the kind of vibe that they're going for.
Right. Even the look and feel, I mean, you know, I was talking about the cowl being like leather and stitched and all of that stuff. I mean, this is stuff that we've never seen really before. You know, Batman makes his costume like Iron Man makes his costume, you know what I mean? Like Spider-Man makes his costume. Now, granted, like it's Bruce Wayne, he's got a shit ton of money, but you know, in the first strokes of him becoming Batman, the dude makes his own costume. So it's like, I like that. I like that that's coming across, and it feels, I'm gonna say a word that like I'm sure everyone's gonna throw up when they hear it, but grounded, but grounded in the sense of like, I don't know, like we're still living in that superhero world, and we're still, you know, this isn't Nolan's film where, you know, things actually needed to work and things needed to be fully functional. Like it's gonna be different from that, but still, you know, it's still gonna come across as like, hey, this is just a man, and like, he doesn't have, you know, this like crazy armored helmet that deflects bullets. Like if Batman gets shot in the head, like it's not going to work out too well for him. But that's just kind of how it feels right now. Cause you know, obviously it's a leather cowl. So I don't know. We'll see how I'm just speculating here.
Yeah.
I'm grasping at straws, but it's to me, that is the brilliance of, you know, Chris, to your point, director driven marketing plays and pushes, because
sure.
it just gets us all talking and spinning out of control, and the excitement level is out of this world.
Yeah, and you know that James Gunn's going to do the same thing with the Suicide Squad, right?
I mean, he kind of already has.
He already has. He's setting the tone for that, and that's cool. It's good when you know directors have that creative freedom, which they do have now, at least with DC. With Marvel now, as we can segue here, because they had yet another director change, right? We mentioned it already on the show that Scott Derrickson was out as the director of the sequel to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Now, though, Variety had this exclusive story a couple weeks ago that Sam Raimi is in talks to direct that movie, and it looks like that might actually happen which is really interesting for a lot of reasons, right? Because so, and they don't get into the details as to other than, of course, the popular creative differences as to why Scott Derrickson left this project. But, you know, Sam Raimi now working within the Marvel structure, formula, whatever you want to call it. As far as this movie itself and the character, like, I think it's a great fit. But is this going to wind up being like an Edgar Wright type of deal where, you know, Sam Raimi finds out that maybe he's not the type of guy that can work within this type of structure? You know, some directors have been able to, right? Ryan Coogler did.
It's very
different
for him now.
Yeah, Taika Waititi did. And you know, obviously, not everybody can do it, though.
Now, he worked with Avi Arad, right? So
right, that was a different... that wasn't Marvel... new Marvel Studios that we know now. That was the, Avi Arad Marvel Studios.
Yeah, the dude that almost burned it to the ground.
Yes.
That man. But you know what I find interesting about Sam Raimi potentially coming on board is in thinking about the universe that Sony is creating with its Spider-Man and its villains... And what could the Doctor Strange movie have to do, if anything, with some of the hopes and dreams that Sony has with Spider-Man and their Spider-Verse and all of that? Would it be craziness to see, you know, some other, like, you know, worlds where another Spider-Man, it's still Toby, you know, it's a Tobey Maguire Spider-Man and... They're doing some, like, I'm losing my mind thinking about what sort of deal that Sony and Marvel struck to get Tom Holland back. And then there's another, so they've got one more team up movie and like have another Spider-Man movie and then another team up movie with Spider-Man in it. So could he pop up in, you know, Doctor Strange? I don't know. I don't know these things. You know, it's like, my comic book brain goes like batshit crazy. I'm like, oh my God, you know, Sam Raimi, he directed the first, you know, he directed all the Spider-Man films and then Spider-Man's picture from Sam Raimi's films pop up in the Morbius film, but that Spider-Man is Tom Holland's Spider-Man. Like, I go nuts.
Yeah, I think that if, you know, and I don't know where they're going with it, and I don't even think it necessarily matters that Sam Raimi's the person directing it, but we know that it's going to tie into the WandaVision show on Disney Plus, right? That's going to lead into this movie, and Scarlet Witch is going to play a big role in this movie. Also, Rachel McAdams, by the way, not returning for this sequel.
I did not see that.
Yeah, but I do think you. I don't think you can call a movie, you know, like in the multiverse of madness, and not at least tease or have some sort of like alternate versions of characters and things like that, right? Because then what's the point of a multiverse if we're not getting that? So I think you have to start to go down that road.
We are getting bits and pieces of it.
Yeah.
Because J. Jonah Jameson popping up.
Yes.
In Spider-Man Far From Home.
Right.
Is totally a version of that.
In a way. I mean, it's a different J. Jonah. Right. It's the same actor, but playing a different version of the character. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep. There you go. So,
oh, shit.
Now you're really going to be losing sleep over all this.
Oh, shit.
And does any of it tie into the animated, you know, Spider-Verse?
Oh, man. Remember I talked about that?
Yep.
I was like, what if there's an animated version of Peter Parker and it's the animated Spider-Verse thing and they connect with the human spider. I don't know.
Oh,
shit.
Yeah. And maybe this is part of that. Maybe this is part of those.
At the beginning of the show, I was cold. I'm warm now. I'm all hot.
Yeah.
I'm
maybe this is part of those creative differences. You know, maybe this thing was the way they wanted it was going to become too big for like Scott Derrickson. That's not really his thing, right? He's kind of a low budget horror director. Prior to doing Doctor Strange, he was The Conjuring guy. What movies did he do?
I don't know. Was it the Conjuring?
No, The Conjuring. James
Wan.
Yeah, that's James Wan. But whatever his movies were.
Booster?
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, he's that's his vibe, and that was what he said he wanted to bring to the table. Now you can argue he didn't do that. Oh, he was the
Sinister,
the exorcism of Emily Rose and Sinister. That was his stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe this was going to start to become too big for him. As far and not at all like his vision, right? Because if you're going to start incorporating these other characters and whatnot, it stops being like your movie, right?
It's
your
not
character.
His vision; it's
correct.
Wanda's vision.
Didn't he direct the first Doctor Strange?
He did.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they probably thought like, oh, we'll bring him back, and then so much has happened since 2016.
I also think the expectations of Doctor Strange are a lot bigger.
Sure. Yeah.
He was definitely a standout character in the Infinity War.
Yes.
Yes.
Films, and
he was cooler in those than he was in his own movie.
Exactly. Yeah. I can imagine Feige going, "Hey, listen, like we're going to use Doctor Strange to really blow this shit up. You got to deliver, and maybe it is essentially created a difference since he just couldn't live up to the hype."
Right.
I don't know. Obviously we're never going to know, sure. But who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's creative differences. That's why it's always so vague. I mean, it's always creative differences, but what are those creative differences, right? Yeah. So, like, we know with Edgar Wright what those creative differences wound up being. And, one day I guess we'll find out what these creative differences were. Patty Jenkins had creative differences with Marvel before she went on to Wonder Woman. So, right. And that didn't work out for anybody, Thor the Dark World.
No.
So, yeah.
Probably the least favorite Marvel film.
Yeah.
Which one?
Thor
the Dark World.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not really director driven. So you just kind of got to stay in line or get in line or not really.
Yeah.
They are in fits and starts, yep. But not, I'd say.
Like the Guardians movies.
Guardians, yeah. Guardians for sure. Obviously the Winter Soldier and everything that the Russo brothers has touched. Is very much their films.
Although kind of though, right? Because the Russo brothers coming from TV didn't really have a style, right? Like I don't think you had them directing Community or whatever it was that they directed. Sure. Like nobody was figuring, oh, they're going to direct like the Winter Soldier and it's going to be that,
Yeah. Well, no, but that was the other thing too, though. The Winter Soldier ended up being like a standout.
Yeah.
Which you still can feel everything that the Winter Soldier is in the other films that they've touched, because it's just the way it is. All of their films have some sort of stakes, whereas like the other films are like, oh yeah, okay, the hero's gonna be fine, whatever.
Yeah. Well, they have big films, yeah.
Yeah.
Why isn't Rachel McAdams returning? Do we know?
No, yeah. I didn't. I didn't really look too much into. Into why, because I saw it as an aside in the Variety article about the director change, and they were like, oh, and by the way, Rachel McAdams isn't going to...
I didn't think she was going to come back anyways. Just because. I just don't. I mean, she was great, and I thought she was the heart of that first film, but for some reason they drop the love interest stuff very fast in these films. They did it with Jane Foster. Interestingly enough though, I think Taika Waititi was like, no, we're bringing her back and we're going to make her Thor. How about that? But in some of these other films, like it just, they, I don't know what it is. It just doesn't work. They're not doing, they don't like double down on it. They don't commit to it. Which I think is a mistake. They should.
It seems like it's not. It's more of just the fact that the character's not going to factor into the movie, because now they're going so deep into the multiverse and into like the magical, mystical side of this that it's almost like human interaction for him at this point would almost be like, especially a love interest would almost be silly.
Right.
Yeah. So I just think it's more of like they're like, nah, there's really no room for the character. Plus, Scarlet Witch is going to be playing a big role in this, so. I just feel like they're going more complete mystical multiverse magic, all that fun stuff. Mm. And it's just like it would be it was sort of like in Thor the Dark World. It's like, well, once you're in Asgard, like the Jane Foster character like was almost right. like whatever, even though now they're building up that character to become Thor in the movies. But yeah, I mean, it's just sometimes it's just the human's going to have to take a step back rather than force them, rather than force feed them in there just to have
step
them.
Step aside, humans. Yeah. Step aside.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
What else do we have?
Well, we got this little nugget too that I happened to see today in Variety. I know you're very excited about this. So Rocket Man filmmaker Dexter Fletcher to direct The Saint reboot.
I adore The Saint. So Vanessa, before we got on here, you had no idea what The Saint was. So we'll give you a quick little summary. So it was an old 60s TV show, right? It was a serial show in the 60s. I've never seen an episode of it. But I don't know how true the movie played in with the show, but it was like essentially this dude who didn't really have an identity. And I'm really going to do this film a lot of justice in this explanation, but he didn't really have an identity. And he like made himself look like other people. It was like, basically it was like Mission Impossible with the whole mask thing. And he gets a contract, and it's about kind of like stealing this formula for cold fusion. And he ends up falling in love with the girl who's the scientist that has it. And anyways, they give cold fusion to Russia.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see. It came out in 97. I was still a kid. I was 7 years old, maybe. No, I was not 7 years old because
I was going to say, damn, you're young.
No, because I was born in 86. So I was not seven.
No.
So I missed it.
Okay. Yeah. You were in a multiverse. It's cool. Right. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. I don't know if it's like the best film, but I don't know how I feel about a remake, actually, because yeah. I am fond of the 90s version because it's Val Kilmer and Elizabeth Shue. And how can you go wrong with that?
Sure. I mean, this is a character that dates back to like the late 20s. Right. It was a book series that like went on forever. I think some like into like the, I don't know. It was around for like 60 years or something like that. And then they made the Roger Moore series in the 60s, which became popular. And then I think there was another version of it too, but yeah. So I don't know. I've been sort of indifferent towards that film for most of it, even though Elizabeth Shue is an all time favorite of mine. It's not a movie that I've revisited very often. Maybe I will now. But why not? See, to me, these are the types of movies that you can remake. Because I think there's room to grow with it. And I think that, I don't think that 1990, no, to you, clearly that movie had made a very big impact on you.
I mean,
but I think to most people, I don't feel like there's the, like the reverence for that film to the point where it's like, oh, you can't. I mean, why are we going?
I don't think anyone even knows anything there is to know about The Saint at all. Oh, that's the other thing. The reason, I mean, he calls himself The Saint, but he names himself when he takes on another identity. He names himself after a saint. So it's like Saint Martin de Porres or something like that. Saint Francis of Assisi or something to that degree. But yeah, sure. Let's okay. I agree. Let's remake it.
Now,
sure.
Also, the rumor is Chris Pratt in talks to play.
God.
Yeah.
Oh.
The character. So.
How do I feel about this? Sorry.
To play the role that Val Kilmer played?
Yeah. Yeah, all right. I can see it. I mean, the humor, like,
yeah,
I see it.
I mean, he's definitely not Roger Moore or Val Kilmer, but that's okay if they go in a different direction with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, John Krasinski did, whatchamacallit, that show on Amazon, Jack Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
And yes. He kind of came, like, I feel like I always confuse them too. So he kind of came out of like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What do you mean you confuse the two of them?
Chris Pratt and John
Krasinski?
Krasinski? They're both like funny, like comedy guys. And then they went on to do like a serious, like John Krasinski went on to do Jack Ryan. And I'm sure a lot of people, when Jack Ryan first came out, they were like, what? Like that guy from like The Office? So
I mean, I get you.
Although, you know, what I mean?
John Krasinski looks like a grown-up dopey from the 70s. You know, like I've said this before. It's just like it's kind of his nose and he's got these like ears that stick out. He just looks like a happy guy all the time. This is seeing him do action films, or even like when I watched Quiet Place, I was like, man, shouldn't you be singing like Kumbaya? What's going on?
Oh, why? He's so good in Jack Ryan, though.
He is.
Well, I haven't seen anything related to Jack Ryan, and I've heard nothing but great things about it. So at some point, I will get on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah,
so maybe Chris Pratt will kind of like have the same, you know, surprise factor. I think John Krasinski surprised a lot of people, and I think a lot of people didn't want to see Jack Ryan because they're like, that's the funny guy.
Right.
I agree with you. You know, it's funny because there's always like a breakout performance from an actor that you consider to be a comic all the time, right? So for me, this is why I really appreciate Smoking Aces, and I will defend that movie till the cows come home. But like Ryan Reynolds is amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
Like he brings that comedic edge, but then there's such a seriousness and darkness to him that when I saw another film, that it was an indie film that he made called Buried. And he's basically like an oil worker in the Middle East who gets kidnapped and then buried.
Ooh.
And the whole movie takes place with him basically in a coffin.
No.
See that movie. It's a great movie, and it's got a shocking twist at the end.
Well,
but like he's one of those. But then he just, you know, he shoots himself in the foot by picking horrible roles outside of Deadpool. But yeah, I see it with Krasinski, and Chris Pratt has certainly stepped it up, I'd say.
Yeah. And he's not a fish. I mean, it's just, you know, that's who they, right now, who they're looking at. But it would make sense, right? Because you would need I think for a property like that to work now, you would, the draw would have to be whoever you get to star in the role, right? Like, that's going to sell a movie like this. So, you know, I think a guy like that who's, you know, hot right now and his movies make a lot of money, like, sure, that makes complete sense. That you'd want to build that property around someone like that.
Yeah, I mean, he was in some serious movies like Her and like Zero Dark Thirty. So it's not that far of a stretch. It's just, you know, we see him as like Peter Quill right now.
Yeah, and the Saint doesn't have to be that serious. I mean, he's essentially like a Robin Hood type character.
Yeah.
You know,
Okay.
I mean, it's not like it's not this, like, it doesn't have to be like this ultra serious thing. I mean, you can definitely have a lot. There's room to have fun with it. So, yeah, I think that, you know, that could work.
Oh, okay.
Aaron, we'll have to convince Aaron to go see it if it ever gets made.
Well, I'll go see The Saint since I didn't see the first one that came out in the 90s.
You should watch it. That's good. The guy that plays, gosh, he always ends up playing like some sort of Russian villain. He's in Batman Begins. He's like the homeless dude that he gives him his coat. Like Bruce gives him his coat, and he's like, when he becomes Batman, he's like, nice coat. And anyways, that guy's the villain.
That's a deep cut right there.
Yeah, it is.
That is. Yeah. You know what though? Like, as an aside, where do you go watch old movies nowadays?
Like my couch.
Like,
no, but like what platform?
You know what? That's a great question. I'll tell you where I will not be watching.
Here we go. I was figuring how we were going to get this into the show. So here we go.
DC Universe. Dude, you can suck donkey balls because.
Why?
So I got into the mood. I was like, I want to see Batman 89, right? And I'm like, finally, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to find it on DC Universe and I'm going to indulge. I'm going to watch Batman 89. And it's not even there. There's no Batman movies on DC Universe. I'm so pissed off. I was like, wait, no Batman movies? Only animated Batman films.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I've paid almost $80 for this service. And there's no Batman movies.
Oh, man.
And, you know,
there's no live action films on there.
When you went on to, so actually I was a little annoyed when you sent me the text today, because I was hoping that your last text to me, which was suck donkey balls or whatever it was, whatever you just said, I was hoping that was going to last forever, because every time I'd open my messages, that's what I saw from you. But I actually looked into this, and apparently it's not the first time it's happened. Apparently, October, and they also took the movies down and then brought them back for the holidays. So apparently this is a thing. And this is why, as much as I love streaming services, and you know I'm a champion of them, I still manage to own the digital copies of those types of movies that I love and will want to watch. So I have my 4K Batman 89 digital copy.
Yeah, I'm going to end up buying. I mean, I have it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Me
dwell that but, too, but yeah.
I mean, who the hell uses Blu-ray?
Right, that's why I get the digital stuff now too, even though I own it physically, because
like,
I can't rely on
that. There needs to be like a Blockbuster streaming service.
Right. Well, I mean, it kind of exists. It's, you know, Apple to a degree or wherever, you know, but I'm already paying for a service.
I know. Yeah, like, where would I even catch the Saint?
You asked the right question with the wrong person. Look, I was like, I'm not going to talk about it on this episode. I'm pissed off about that. Believe me.
Because
I was
and
then I was looking. I'm like, what other stuff do they not have? Oh, they have nothing on here.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of stuff I don't want to see.
So I'm sure the Saint is probably available to at least rent on like Amazon and Vudu and wherever. If it isn't even available for free, it could very well be on something. What I like to do is if you have a Roku, I just ask Roku to find the title for me, and then they'll let me know if it's available for free or if I have to pay for it or whatever.
Ah.
Yeah. So that's usually the way I go. Although, you know, I use Amazon Prime and Vudu a lot. So they do free movies sometimes. They'll even do like rentals. But sometimes their deals are so good on the digital copies that I just buy them because it's a couple bucks more than like the rental. I actually watched Knives Out this weekend.
Ooh, how was that?
So interesting. I have to rewatch it, to be honest with you, because I have to be like, it's a good movie. It's obviously well acted. There's a great cast. It's smart. It's well written, but it's not in a lot of ways what I thought it was going to be. So that threw me a little bit. Cause I, based
is it,
on
is it,
the,
it's available on digital.
It's on Vudu, has like early access. Yeah. So I, based on the trailers, I was expecting like this fun, somewhat funny, like murder mystery. And it's not, it's really just kind of a straight mystery. It's not particularly funny. It's not particularly fun. It's really just kind of straight. And that really kind of threw me a little bit. So I don't know that I found it as entertaining as I expected, but it's obviously a good movie and a well-made movie. And with a, like I said, with a great cast. So I kind of want to rewatch it again, cause I think I was just a little thrown, and I was in kind of a mood this weekend, so I was like looking for something fun to watch, like just to, and
you're like, damn it, man,
this wasn't
too serious for me.
This wasn't really, it wasn't exactly what I was expecting it to be. So I think I need to give it like a rewatch just to fully digest it.
I'm gonna try to catch that this weekend. I've got some movies I need to watch. I have Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Haven't watched it yet.
What have you guys seen? Have you guys seen 1917?
No.
Vanessa, just so you know, The Saint is available for free on Prime Video.
Yes, I'm looking on IMDb now, and I see that, and I have Prime Video, and maybe I'll watch it.
In fact, you can even rewatch the 60s show with Roger Moore too, if you want, on Prime Video.
Skip that.
Skip that.
1917 is a must-watch in theaters.
Oh, cool. I bet it's dope in IMAX.
No, I don't really like IMAX. Try and see it in a Dolby Cinema if you can. That's the best cinema.
Yeah.
Cool.
And not because I kind of work for them, but kind
of. Got it. Vanessa, we're going to get the plugs in a minute.
Damn. Yeah. And I still have to, and I have it, and I haven't had a chance to sit and watch it yet, but I will be getting to Parasite before this weekend, because that's a must, because I'm a big fan of the director. I've loved almost all of his movies so far. So I expect to love this one too, because The Host is great. Snowpiercer is great. And I've heard nothing but amazing things about Parasite. So that's next on my list.
How do you have it? You know, someone that's in,
no, it's got an early access on release on Vudu. Okay. So I just bought it. Cause I own all of the Bong Joon-ho, like I own The Host, I own Snowpiercer, so I just bought it, assuming that I'm probably gonna like it. If I don't, oh well. But you know, I'm just a huge fan of his. So
they're gonna remake it.
For who?
For an American audience.
Well, hopefully it goes the way of The Host remake that never happened, because that was gonna be remade
like
too.
Old Boy?
Well, that did happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know.
But The Host was going to be remade like almost 10 years ago and for US, and it never made. And also like The Raid, which was going to be remade in the US, with, and that never happened either. So every once in a while, these things fall apart for the better. It's getting big now here.
Perfection. How do you outmake perfection?
Yeah. Especially with a movie like Parasite.
I haven't seen it.
Because it's doing okay, like, in, it's doing pretty well here now that it won the Oscar, especially. So it's like, it's not like it's this like unknown like foreign film that like American audiences aren't like aware of. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think they should just leave it as is, though.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Let's before we wind up forgetting, because I do want to get to this. Let's get to this final question here that we had from Truth Serum on Twitter. Considering Wonder Woman isn't known at all during the time of BVS, right? So he says, remember, Batman doesn't know her except from the World War One pick. How will she be forgotten after what happens during Wonder Woman 84? So we've kind of talked about this, right, before?
Yeah.
How we feel like Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman movie, sort of retconned a lot of what happened in BVS, as far as like, because she says at the very end, like, I will never leave you, even though we were told that she abandoned us for 100 years or whatever in BVS. And they kind of went back to that in Justice League, because they couldn't dance around it.
Sure.
I don't know that they're going to.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, for to what end, right? Like, continuity doesn't matter.
Right.
Obviously. And it goes back to what we were saying about how, you know, they've fractured their quote unquote universe. So why paint yourself into a corner? Why not just let her be the hero that everyone loves and wants her to be? And who cares if she was known to the public or not?
Plus, the continuity is already destroyed, right? Because didn't they say it was like 100 years that she had abandoned humanity in BVS?
I mean, it was 100%.
Yeah, now we're in 1984. So forget it. Just the very existence of the movie destroys that continuity.
Right? Exactly.
So we don't need to address it.
Turn my back on humanity.
Yeah, exactly. We don't need to address that anymore, because the fact that the movie exists destroys it all. So, and I'm sure they're going to want to make a sequel to this, right, when it makes a gazillion dollars. So, you know, you're just going to keep taking her. The next one will be in the 90s or whatever it is, or current day. So, yeah, they're just going to, I mean, I don't think it matters. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited to see Kristen Wiig, though.
Yeah.
I want to see what her character looks like.
Speaking of, like, comedic actors that kind of, well, like, Kristen has done some stuff, but she really hasn't been in, like, a big blockbuster movie like this, like a superhero movie before.
She tried. And that
with what?
Ghostbusters.
Oh, my God.
Curse splat.
Yeah, that was just a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't right. Yeah, but.
No.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's going to be a fun character. I mean, we don't know based on the trailer how much of, like, her as Cheetah we're going to see, right?
She's going to be the villain.
She's one of the villains.
Pedro Pascal is the...
Yeah, so I'm assuming, you know, you're going to eventually, but I feel like it's going to be almost like her origin kind of that's being told, like, sort of around the greater theme of the movie.
She's going to betray her, because in the trailer we see them like being friends.
Yeah.
And like really liking each other. And you just know she's just going to betray her and stab her in the back at some point.
Sure. And they're not showing you the outfit, the costume, right, or whatever.
No. Yeah.
So, yeah, that either means that she's going to have it for just a very brief period of time, or maybe not until the end, and they're going to save it as a reveal. Because she is one of the great villains, right, for Wonder Woman. Yeah. So you might want to, I'm assuming if it works, you're going to want her to be maybe lead down the road. Kristen Wiig is?
No, the character of Cheetah. Because it just goes so, I mean, it's like the humanoid Cheetah.
Well, it's not like, I mean, she doesn't have like the greatest rogues gallery, so that's her.
No, they went deep. Like, they weren't like, we're going to give you some craziness. She's going to grow fur, her teeth are going to come out, she's going to have like claws. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, whoa, I can't wait to see how you're going to do this, but I'm down. I mean, Wonder Woman is basically swinging off of lightning bolts, so it can't get any better than that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, unless they go the Challenge of the Super Friends route, where she's just wearing like a suit. She's cool, but who knows? But that's my most anticipated movie of this year.
Oh,
I've said that a lot.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I saw the trailer again before Birds of Prey, and it just gets me like every time. I just love everything about that trailer. The music, the vibe.
It's the 80s, man.
Yeah.
She's like colorful, vibrant, everything she, you know.
Yeah.
It's, they do it, you know. And the beautiful thing about the Wonder Woman piece is because they're doing these time capsules with her. It's great because we don't have to rely on anything else but her. You know what I mean? And they are really great character pieces, and they did such a great job at sort of developing Diana as a character who loves and cares for people and humanity and all of that stuff. And it came through so strong in the first film. I'm just looking forward to more of that, because that's what Superman should have been. And I'm glad that they were like, we couldn't get Superman right, so we're just going to make sure that Wonder Woman knocks that out of the park. And she did. For real. So.
Yeah, well, and you know, Patty Jenkins clearly had a love for the character.
100%.
Yeah, and that comes through.
And Gal Gadot. So, Gal Gadot.
I just hope that she, like, speaks more.
It seems like she will in this.
Who, Gal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, she not speak in the first film?
She did, but I just...
Do you think it's her accent?
I don't know. Maybe they were trying to shy away from that, you know, but I just hope she like talks more.
Well, they seem to be doing the reverse fish out of water now, with where she's the one kind of showing Steve Rogers around, where he's the fish out of water now in this, and she's the one who kind of gets it. So I would assume that we're going to see like a fully evolved, fully developed character at this point.
I'm hoping for that. I mean, I like the first Wonder Woman movie, but I just felt like it missed a little something on her, and I don't know if it was like the actress's capabilities or if it was just how the story was written, which might have something to do with each other. So we'll see.
Yeah. Third act was a rough one, but for the most part.
Yeah, I didn't have as big an issue with that third act as a lot of people did.
I remember sitting next to Jess and she was like, "What? Wait, what just happened in this movie? Why is there some dude with a helmet? Where'd he come from?"
Yeah.
I'm like, "Here we go. Steppenwolf." Anyways.
Yeah, alrighty. we want more character. I want more character development from these like female-led superhero movies, you know?
Yeah.
I think you're going to get that with this one.
I feel like we're not there yet.
Yeah, because this movie now doesn't have like the... I feel like this one's going to have more of that. I don't know. Hopefully.
Maybe do some flashback scenes and stuff like that too. Sure. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. So let's wrap this bad boy up.
Yeah.
Do some plugs. Vanessa, you are always welcome on the show.
Aw, thank you guys so much for having me. This is so much fun.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, and I'm glad we can get you back on a podcast, and hopefully we'll make this a more regular thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So we'll let you have the honors of plugging first, and then we'll close the show.
Ooh, what am I going to plug?
I don't know. What do you want to plug?
All right. I haven't been on Twitter for a while, so follow me on Twitter. It's Vanessa Bontea, Bontea. Tweet me some questions and stuff. I really want to get back into the swing of things, and I'm, you know, my 2020 goals are just really focused on getting deeper into everything that I love and just really focusing on, curiosity and learning about things. So that might be a little deep, but that's kind of my 2020 goal. So I'm open to conversation and talking to people about things. I just think we're so far removed from conversation and talking in general. Mm-hmm. So being on this podcast and talking with you guys like for over an hour is just seriously a highlight of my week.
Aww.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that.
Cool. All right, Chris.
All right. Well, on that note, of course, you go to thefanboygarage.com. You can check out our episodes. You can go to our merch store, get yourself an I'm Cool iPodcast t-shirt because, you know, you are and we are and all that. And, of course, we want you to join the conversation. You can do that on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, at the Fanboy Garage, on all of those things. And you can find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at AARonSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. And, of course, if you do like what you've heard, you'd like our special guests, please do leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you're listening to us. It could be on the browser. It could be on Podbeam. It could be on Stitcher. It could be on Spotify. Whatever. Leave us a 5-star review. It goes a long way. Helps the show. And we really appreciate your support. But until then, we will catch you guys on the next episode. Thanks so much for listening. And we are out.